KFFB is 106.1 FM. This is Bob Connell. Thank you so much for joining us for another edition of our open mic program. And we do have Congressman Vic Snyder with us. And Congressman, as always, thanks for taking time and talking with us for open mic.
Good to be with you, Bob.
Well, one thing we've been talking about, it seems like all year, every time we get together, and that is, of course, health care. And I know in the House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi is leading the effort to combine the work of three House committees. What is that going to entail, and is that still going on?
The discussion is still going on, and you're correct. We've had three different versions of health care reform, although they have a lot of similarities. There's important differences, too. Ways and Means Committee has a version of it. The Education and Labor Committee has a version of it. And then the Energy and Commerce Committee, on which Mike Ross sits, has a version of it. And the way that works when you have competing versions is people have to get together and negotiate and try to figure out which version do you go with, or which parts of which bill do you go with. It will then go be presented to our Rules Committee, which makes the rules and sends the bills to the floor for consideration. That process, I think, will take a bit of time, partly because once that final version comes up, it will be sent to Congressional Budget Office, CBO, for scoring, so we can know how much it will cost. And also, it's going to sit there for at least a few days, and maybe even a little longer, so that the American people and the Congress and, you know, all the people that have an interest in health care, which is all of us, will have a chance to analyze it and read it and understand it.
When it comes to that point, then when you say all of America, will it be like on your website, or will it be on the government website?
It will be readily available on the House website, and the Senate will do the same thing when they have a version up, but it will be available electronically for those who want to read it electronically. And that, which is probably the easiest way, since it will be fairly lengthy.
Now, what about the government-run insurance option? Is that still on the table?
That is still on the table, and it is probably the most significant part of the discussion going on right now. Because one of the Senate versions did not have that as an option. The one that came out as former Senator Ted Kennedy's version did, and then in the House, a lot of the discussion is about what will the rates be. I want to put this in perspective. Remember that this is only an option. And in fact, Congressional Budget Office estimates that at the end of 10 years, only 10 million Americans would be covered by it. So it's a very, very small part of our total population that is predicted to be covered by the public option. The great majority of us would still be covered by the private insurance. And the reason is nobody's going to be required to be in it. There's going to be no mandate that you would be in this public option if that becomes the final version. But you would have a choice between, you know, your traditional Blue Cross Blue Shield or United Health. But in certain areas of the country where there is not very many insurance companies that offer products, some people are predicted which would find the public option more appealing, perhaps, for whatever reasons, cost or services, I'm not sure.
Well, that's one thing you got to iron out, though. Who's going to be eligible? I mean, is this just going to be another welfare program?
It wouldn't be a welfare program at all. The way that would work is right now, you know, most of us get our insurance through the private market, through our employer. And the estimate is that depending on the version of the bill, that those of us who are in the individual market, meaning we don't have any insurance and we're not getting it through our employer, would be eligible for what's called the exchange. And also small businesses of a certain size would be eligible to buy their insurance through the exchange. And each year that goes by, the bill would probably allow more and more people to be in the exchange, you know, to increase the number of employees per business. Instead of it being, you know, 25 or 50, they could go up as time goes by, as years go by. So early on, then a person would say, "Okay, I'm going to buy my insurance. I'm eligible. I'm going to go in this exchange," which I kind of look on like Progressive.com or something. We can go online and just see what the different options are. And you would say, "Okay, here's a standard product that the government has determined through the exchange. It covers this and this and this and this. We know it's as good as an average employer-based plan. And the price for Blue Cross Blue Shield is this much. The price for United Healthcare is this much." And then there's this public option, whatever its name is going to be, and it's offered for this much. And the person who would make a decision to choose the public option, they will the premiums, they'll still have to pay a premium. There will be a uh, uh, the, the public option will be expected to pay for itself. It will not get any subsidies from the government. So that, I mean, that's the basic outline, but it would be a choice. There will be no, you would never go into exchange and find the only choice would be the public option. It is just intended to be an additional choice. And what's interesting to me, Bob, is it has gotten a lot of attention, in my view, more attention than it probably should have because of a plan that's estimated it will only cover 10 million people. To me, the basic crux of healthcare reform is, do we think there should be insurance law reform? I think most Americans do, that we don't like the idea of pre-existing conditions affecting your ability to get insurance. I think a substantial portion of the American public believes that there should be a mandate that people have insurance. The problem is, if people who don't have health insurance, the rest of us end up paying for them when they end up being hospitalized and they have no health insurance. Our premiums are probably $1,100 a year higher because we pay for the uninsured, and hospitals have to make up that difference somewhere. And then if you're going to have a mandate for coverage, then you have to recognize that some people will need a subsidy. That's a pretty big chunk of the bill, that those lower-income people and smaller businesses that are low-income businesses would require some kind of a subsidy on a sliding scale. And the reason we would do that as a government is because we as a country will come out ahead financially if everybody's in the system. That helps keep costs lower for us all. And then the fourth part of it is, how do you pay for it all? Because it has to not add to our deficit. So that's the basic core of the plan. Then you have this one detail, an important detail, but still a detail. Should there or should there not be a public option? And so that's what I mean when I say that the discussion about the public option has occupied a whole lot more attention than the basic plan, which as I've outlined it.
Now, one thing, too, I know that the abortion, it seems like it's a hot topic, only because it is government-paid abortion. If someone's against abortion, that's still someone's choice. But if it means someone who's not for abortion allowing their monies or tax money being paid for it, that's where the red flag comes out. Where does that stand now?
Yeah, and I think that's a very, very important issue. It is very important to me that these health care, whatever the final version of the health care law is, that it not change the current restrictions on government-funded abortions. The current restriction is that abortions can't be paid for with federal tax dollars, the old Hyde Amendment language, except to save the life of the mother or in the cases of rape or incest. And it's important to me that that be what happens in the final version, that there not be any federal funds go except for those three exceptions. And this is a significant issue because the complexity of this. And so there are people who say, well, yeah, but if you keep federal funds from going for it, that the person's own personal money could go for it. Well, yeah, that may be true. On the other hand, that can, you know, how people spend their private money now is their business. So it is an important issue, but I hope that we will see this resolved in a way that most people are satisfied that federal dollars and the restrictions on federal dollars are not going to be used for any more abortions than are allowed now under federal law, which is to save the life of the mother and for cases of rape or incest.
So does each three of these bills have that option where the government would pay or they don't pay?
The five bills deal with it in different ways because they have gone through the amendment process. The one coming out of Energy and Commerce had an amendment put on it. It has different language than the ones coming out of Ways and Means and Education and Labor Committee. And then the Senate language is different.
Okay, then what about the healthcare stockholders? Where are those major ones? Where are they standing on this?
What's interesting about this is I think it's really important. You know, if I was in the state legislature back in 92 and 93 and 94 when we were talking about healthcare so much in the country. And I have been pleased to see a lot of the different groups get on board the importance of doing something about healthcare. The hospital groups have been supportive. The hospital group has been supportive of this. I talked to members of hospital boards from Arkansas, and they're supportive. The AMA, through their formal process, has been supportive, although there clearly are, you know, people who are on hospital boards and doctors who are not supportive. But what you find this time around is that a lot of employers, both big businesses and small businesses, are supportive. A lot of provider groups are supportive. A lot of consumer groups are supportive. And so I think that's why you see it, that it has the momentum it has. Where it gets slowed down is the complexity of it. And part of the complexity is that for those of us who have health insurance, most of us through our employer, and we like what we have, there is the natural human tendency to say, I don't like what I have. I don't want it to change. And it has been challenging to present the arguments to people, but wait a minute, it is changing. It's changing in the wrong direction. You know, every year when your insurance company says your rates are higher, that doesn't just happen. It happens because of we don't have the right policy in the United States with regard to health care. I've talked to small businesses, their rates have gone up 30% a year, or policies have been rescinded for individuals, or people can't get health insurance because of pre-existing conditions, or a small business has had a policy for years and years, the insurance company suddenly gets very difficult to work with because somebody in the small business now has a cancer or a chronic illness. So there's a lot of reasons why what's going on now is not working for those of us who have health insurance, and we just have to keep talking about where we will be 5 and 10 years from now as we will see these rates finally slow down so that small businesses and individuals don't have to deal with these too high increases each year or a reduction in benefits like with higher deductibles or higher copays.
And I guess the big question, how is it going to be paid for? I know that's something you've mentioned. It's got to be talked about, but what are some of the ideas?
Well, there's a lot of different ideas on the table, and it's not clear to me yet how that's all going to be worked out. And one way is that we've got to do a more efficient job of delivering what we already have. For example, we do not do a very good job in Medicare of dealing with preventing return hospitalizations. We do not do a very good job of managing chronic care. We do not do a very good job of having adequate number of primary care physicians so that we avoid medical errors. All those are the kinds of things that can help Medicare deliver a better product to Medicare recipients but lower costs. So this bill is going to fund some things like information technology and computerized medical records that we have known for years we need in the United States but don't have. There also will be there's just different discussions going on. One discussion in the House is to have some kind of a surcharge on the wealthiest Americans to help add to the money necessary. But that will be part of the legislative process because the bills are still a work in progress. And once we've come up with some final version, then obviously those will be scrutinized thoroughly by the American people and the Congress.
We've been talking with Congressman Vic Snyder, and today's topic is health care. Join us tomorrow here on KFFB 106.1 FM as we'll be talking about the Afghanistan war.